Manchester City and Liverpool might be marching on, but the Gunners' quest to stop their two rivals winning the full Monty takes them to Sheffield on Monday night. Not in Chris Wilder's wildest dreams will the Blades be expecting to stick the knife into another title bid for Mikel Arteta's side, but stranger things have happened, or have they? This is the Arsenal Beat. Hi guys, it's another Thursday, another preview pod as the season continues to hurl itself towards another conclusion. Arsenal will no doubt be hoping to be part of the title picture once again come May. But for now, I'm Mark Manbrines from PA, and to discuss Monday's upcoming trip to Bramall Lane, I'm joined by Kai Kainak of Football London and the Evening Standard's Simon Collings. Simon, fresh off your Guess the Gooner performance last week. Stunning, I've seen reviews. Did you get Mondays? Did you fare better than Jordan Davies?
I did eventually get it, but I must admit I got it about the time that Art did. I do think the Van Bronckhorst one was a bit of a one-off shout, a bit like one of his sort of left-footed screamers. I wouldn't be sort of banking on me to be getting the title every week, but did feel for Jordan on debut, bit of stage fright, but he'll come back stronger, I'm sure.
I think it's a hell of a shout, given I think it was Luis Boamorte rather than Gio Van Bronckhorst, wasn't it?
Oh my God, it is. That's how much I've moved on from it. When was Van Bronckhorst on here?
You've ruined next week's Guess the Gooner already.
Oh, Van Bronckhorst was the other one I can remember listening to. This is what happens. All my life is just spent with ex-Arsenal players floating around my head, and I just sort of randomly spurt them out.
To continue the full Monty link, very tedious at best, Kaya, of hot chocolate fame, of course. Most people who listen to the pod won't be aware you've taken on production duties for the pod, hence the overall increase in professionalism, as you can tell that you put time in to actually put these things together, editing out my dog barking, which might happen at some point. And of course, to make the Arsenal Beat accessible to all, Kaya also has to go through and remove all the swearing. Don't know how the you're finding it, mate, but it must be really, really, really f***ing hard to edit out.
I really thought when you said, when you mentioned the full Monty, and you said Kaya has taken up, I assumed that was going to end with male stripping. So I'm quite happy with production as the end of that sentence. It could have gone anywhere. So yeah,
reproduction.
Yes.
Look, if this business is on its arse, then maybe male stripping. Definitely not the way forward for me. who was his mate? Who's Robert Carlyle's mate? I can play that. The guy who was in Game of Thrones. That'll have to be my part, won't it?
I've actually not seen the full Monty. I just know I need to watch it before I go up to Sheffield on Monday night, but I've not seen it. I just know the premise of it.
Hold on though, what year were you born?
97.
I think the full Monty came out in 1997.
That'll be so wild.
Maybe we can. That's like me, like saying, talking about like the Terminator, probably, which is terrifying. Films that came out the year you were born.
Has Kaya seen The Terminator? That's the question.
I have also not seen The Terminator. I'm sorry. Sorry.
What a f***ing liberty. Right, let's move away from that. Thursday is not only our preview day, but also our day of debate. All three of us have to answer a question, and we can't move on until we've agreed who has brought the right answer to the table. We've argued so far over who Arsenal should sign in the summer and who is the club's current unsung hero. Now, though, following on from a point made on Monday's review show, we asked our panel, which injured player have Arsenal missed the least? So which player whose absence has been not particularly hard felt? And Kaya, given that you've got to edit out all that start there, and you've got bad toothache, let's let you get the ball rolling with your answer.
Yeah, so my answer is Thomas Partey. He's obviously played 15 minutes since August. He's been absent for a lot of the time this season. And in seasons gone by, that would have been a massive, massive issue for Arsenal. They wouldn't have been able to cope. You think back to the years when it seemed to be almost every other week, Arsenal would be stressing over Thomas Partey's injuries. I remember in the Man City FA Cup game last season when he came off at half-time and Albert Sambi-Lokonga was the only real backup, and there was a lot of concern about what that meant for Arsenal going forward into the season, and it's not really anymore. So between 2020 when he signed and 2022, Arsenal's win percentage with him was 59% and without him was 44%. I don't know the stat for since that time, but I know they've won a lot of games. I know he's been absent for a lot of the games this season, and obviously the reason they've been able to cope with that is a mixture of Declan Rice, who's played most of the season in that number six position where Partey normally plays for Arsenal, and Jorginho, who's stepped up to be a really, really important player. There's a lot of people sniffed at the signing of Jorginho when he arrived, but Arsenal now arguably have the most in-depth defensive midfield position in the Premier League. If you look across the rest of their title contenders, if Liverpool were to lose McAllister, I think they'd struggle, or Endo, I think they'd struggle. If City lose Rodri, as we've seen several times, they really struggle. But Arsenal have been without probably one of the most influential players of Mikel Arteta's time at the club for pretty much the whole season, and none of us have even spoken about it. It's getting to the point where it's not even that big a story that Thomas Partey is coming back into the squad and could potentially be available for Sheffield United. So I think they've missed in the least out of all the injured players, but I'm interested to hear what the arguments against that are.
My main argument against that is that you didn't once mention Mohamed Elneny in a conversation about Arsenal defensive midfielders. We'll come on to the fours and against afterwards, after we've all pitched in our names. So, Simon, who are you chucking in?
I'm going to go with Gabriel Jesus, who, I think when he played against Forest earlier in January, and it was similar after when he played against Sevilla and was brilliant and sort of won the game and then got injured swiftly afterwards. A few of us were sort of having concerns about how Arsenal would cope with that. But I think if you look at the numbers, you know, purely based on that, they've coped exceptionally well without him. You know, 25 goals in six games, I think it is. Leandro Trossard has looked brilliant as a false nine. Kai Havertz, when he's played up front, has looked excellent. And I actually think, you know, there's an argument when Jesus comes back, he's going to have a fight to get his place in the team back. Particularly, I think, with Havertz, who I thought was really good against Liverpool. I thought he was excellent against Newcastle. And suddenly an area of the pitch where, you know, there was genuine and rightful concerns about Arsenal's lack of depth. I think now you look at it and you can think that Arsenal could play Trossard, they can play Havertz, and Jesus being out isn't a huge issue, which I think at the start of the season it would have been. I think it's evolved now, this team, and the way Arteta set them up. He's found solutions to cope without Jesus. And yeah, just purely looking at those numbers since the break, when Jesus hasn't played, they've scored bags of goals still. So, Gabby Jesus is my shout.
Two very good shouts. Now the best shout. Mine is Alex Zinchenko. I mentioned on Monday's pod, which actually I think was the catalyst for the whole of this debate. But if you look at it just from a left-back position, not really been missed at all, I don't think, even though you'd have imagined if he got injured at the start of the season, you'd have seen Tomiyasu come in, also injured. You'd have seen Timber come in, also injured. So arguably the fourth choice left back at the moment in Jakub Kivior, yet his absence isn't really being felt. And I think you can look at the defensive numbers in terms of what they're shipping in terms of goals has massively improved in recent weeks. And it's almost like with a specialist defender at left back that has helped shore it up. But it also across that whole defence go to the other side. Well, I think, but you know, we all know how good a player Ben White is, but it's just allowed him to be that inverted fullback, and he has shone at that position. And I don't think, arguably, there's no one who matches Zinchenko, arguably in the league, even in that Man City team and things like that, for that inverted role. But I think White does it in a way that you can also still have a level of trust with him defensively, which I don't think is often there with Zinchenko. We saw it a few times this season where Arsenal have been under the cosh and actually Arteta decided to take Zinchenko off in games. Normally, I think if you look to the stats, to bring on Tomiyasu when they are struggling a bit and when he's being targeted on that left-hand side. And I think a lot of teams, especially the better teams, when they played Arsenal, would look at when you're analysing it and you're looking for the weakness and where you should target, rightly or wrongly, I think a lot of them would pick Zinchenko at left-back and think we can get our right-winger in behind him, whereas that isn't there anymore. And I just think it even further lowers the number of weaknesses you can target in that Arsenal team. And that's not to say Zinchenko won't come back in and play a part at some point, as I'm sure Jesus and Partey will. I just don't think he's been as missed as people would have feared at the start of the season. So, bit of a stalemate, this. Bit of a stalemate. I don't know. I'm sticking with Zinchenko, I think, but purely because I made the point on Monday, but Kaya, I'm intrigued. Let's round on Collings first and Jesus. I think the point is, I get your point about all the goals, but I think the argument with Jesus is often that he brings more than goals, isn't it, Kai?
Yes, which is, I think, probably his biggest asset, and why, as much as Man City sold him, they were sort of reluctant-ish to let him go. And it's why Mikel Arteta will, I think, if Jesus is available, start him 9 times out of 10 in the team. I know he was available against Newcastle and didn't play, but wasn't fully fit. So, yeah, it's all those other things, but I think maybe people, and I know this is, we're speaking on the podcast, which where we did a whole devoted episode to which striker Arsenal should sign in the summer, but I don't think Arsenal necessarily need that out and out nine that people say. Because I do think that when they've got players who are finishing chances with, you know, a decent regularity like they are now, they do have good options up front. And to be fair, after Thomas Partey, I'd say Gabriel Jesus is a player they've been able to deal with without the best, because he has been quite injury prone this season. He's missed lots of big games. He's missed important matches, both games against Liverpool this year, missed big Champions League games. And Arsenal have been able to get by without him. And I don't think necessarily there have been too many games where you think, oh, Jesus wasn't there, so Arsenal would have looked so much better with him. Obviously, they've got a lot of alternatives to Jesus. You can play Trossard there, you can play Havertz there, you can play Eddie Nketiah there, if you still remember him. So there's lots of players who can fill that void. And I do think Arsenal are quite stacked. But the reason I still stand by Partey as the choice over him is just because it is still a big deal when Gabriel Jesus comes back. It's still... he does get straight back into the team. Thomas Partey, I'm not so sure. And I still think with Alex Zinchenko, when he's fit, he more or less comes straight back into the team because of what he offers Arsenal that no one else can. I know you mentioned there's not been many games where Zinchenko's been missed, but I think that Fulham game on New Year's Eve when he was absent, Arsenal really struggled with Zinchenko, with Kibior doing the whole inversing thing. And that's changed now, and Mikel Arteta's tweaked it. But in Porto, for example, and the same goes to Jesus, I think Arsenal did really miss the experience, and without that, they struggled a bit. They haven't had Partey for the whole season, and I think, you know, we'd all argue they're doing pretty well. So I've managed to turn it back around to arguing in favour of my point, even though that wasn't what you asked me, but there you go.
Simon, Kai is currently having issues with his wisdom teeth, probably affecting his wisdom at the same time, if you have me there. Why not Thomas Partey? Why do they miss Thomas Partey, do you think?
I mean, I do agree that there are, you know, elements of the party that are missed. I think Kai's point there about when you're watching a game and you're sat thinking about how Arteta can change it. Like if he was turning to the bench and being like, oh, you know, wish had Zinchenko to bring on here, wish had Jesus to bring on here. I can see Kai's argument in terms of there haven't been loads of Arsenal games where I think we've probably sat there and gone, oh, if only they had sort of Partey in there. I think there's probably been a handful where the physicality he brings to midfield, and certainly in the bigger games they've got coming up in the run-in, I do think the prospect of having Partey and Rice together is a pretty, you know, strong prospect for Arsenal and what that could do for their midfield. But given I am talking about Jesus, I will sacrifice myself and let him come out of the running. We can decide between Zinchenko and Partey. I mean, all we can do, what we did on the striker podcast, where we all gave three options, just pick someone else anyway. But I think
we're not going Fabio Vieira, definitely.
actually,
I've probably missed Fabio Vieira the least. Let's be honest, yeah, maybe.
But I think there is. I think certainly out of the three we suggested, I think there's been the most games where people have gone, oh, if they had Jesus. Whereas I think out of Zinchenko and Partey, they're the two where you could argue it's less so where the absence has been felt. So I'm pretty much on the fence between going Partey or Zinchenko. Mark, what should make me sway to Zinchenko after hearing Kai's pearls of white wisdom about Partey?
Well, as Your Honour, I think my thing with Zinchenko is, and whilst I agree that you say about missing him and that inverting and going forward and things, I think the proof is in the pudding defensively. They're just so much better. And that is what they've kind of built their title bid on this season, which sounds silly to say when they're, you know, thrashing teams left, right and centre at the moment. But I think the start of the season, when there was more of a struggle going forward, it was about defending and keeping tight at the back. And whether it's Kivior or Tomiyasu, either of those at left back, I think offers the option of being a lot tighter at the back. And as I say, you don't really lose that inverse position because you've got Ben White doing it on the other side. And I just, so for that reason, I just don't think really Zinchenko has been missed at all, to be honest.
I mean, the proof will be in terms of when Zinchenko is fit, how quickly he is parachuted into that team. Because, I mean, I can think of, you know, times in the past 18 months where they've desperately got him back, you know, for big games. And then he's been out for two more weeks, you know, with the same calf issue because they were so desperate to get him back. And maybe it's, you know, an example of how the team is evolving beyond him that they're not so desperate to absolutely get him back. They're happy to wait and say, look, let's just make sure he's ready and we'll play and bring him in then.
Do you think as well that actually the three names we picked there, that are actually probably the last year, well, I mean, 18 months is pretty much their whole Arsenal runs, I know, but injury has pretty much plagued all three of them for the last year, hasn't it? They're three big players in Mikel Arteta's squad, but they almost can't be trusted. All three of those three can't really be trusted week in, week out, can they, Kaya?
Well, I think the proof is in the pudding, particularly with Partey, that in the summer, Arsenal were willing to sell him, and they probably will be again this summer. And Arsenal have essentially moved on from Thomas Partey. He was such an important player, but they've moved on. They bought in Declan Rice, they bought in Jorginho. They'll make a decision on whether to extend Jorginho's contract. But I imagine if they do extend Jorginho's contract, that's kind of it for Thomas Partey's Arsenal career, because they do want to sign another midfielder this summer. So I think, yeah, they're already past it. They don't necessarily need him anymore. Arguably, I think, to be honest, where maybe Arteta would think Partey has been missed more has been his ability to play fullback, which Arteta seems to really like. I'm not a huge fan of it myself, having seen limited glimpses of it at the start of the season, but Arteta seems to like that unpredictability that he can bring. And he's spoken in press conferences that we've been at where he said Arsenal have missed that sort of difficulty to know what they're going to do, because most of the time you know what Arsenal are going to do just because their squad's been quite stretched for most of the season. But now with all the players coming back, they've got that unpredictability and you don't know what they're going to do. And that's what Arteta's been trying to build this whole time while he's been at Arsenal. Having said that, I still think they've got enough options at right back and in defensive midfield that Partey isn't necessarily as needed as in seasons gone by. And I know you say that defensively they've been a lot stronger without Zinchenko. I just feel like some games are Alex Zinchenko games and some games are Takehiro Tomiyasu games. And you mentioned the big games. Yeah, I think Arteta probably would, if he had them fit the whole season, probably would bring in Tomiyasu for the big game. Do you think of Liverpool, Anfield away, where Salah scored and probably Tomiyasu might cut that one out? Or even Nottingham Forest, where, and that's not really a big game, but the goal Zinchenko sort of is at fault for. Tomiyasu probably deals with it a bit better. And there's quite a few of those instances. Having said that, there's been so many games where Zinchenko has influenced the attacking side of things. And when he's really on song going forward, there's no fullback in the world like it. Genuinely, there's no one who I can think of who compares from fullback who can do what he does. So I think he is a big miss when he's not there, just in terms of the options he offers Arsenal. I don't think that's the same with Partey. And I know we've ruled Jesus out, but I don't think that's quite the same with him either.
Right. Come on then. We need to agree here. I think it's only fair, Kaya, that Simon has the deciding vote here, because he gallantly ruled out Jesus quite early on in the running. So I think, Simon, this is all on you. You can take all the abuse for the name you're about to give, yeah. But which player have Arsenal missed the least?
The name I'm going to give is Luis Bermorte. No, I'm going to go... I think I'm going to go for Partey, simply because of the longevity of time that they've coped without him, I think just because of the, you know, it's been probably what, since October, since he last played. You know, that's coming up to 5 months now. And the way the team has dealt with that, I think just gives him the nudge over Zinchenko. But I do agree with Zinchenko. And I think it will be an interesting thing the rest of the season and beyond it, what happens with Zinchenko and that role, whether the team is now evolving in a position where, you know, we obviously know Timber can invert from right back, whether that's something they do and they look to have a more traditional left back. But they certainly now have an option, I think, of not being so reliant on Zinchenko. And I think Arteta deserves credit for that, for the way the team's evolved. And it probably comes back to the point, you know, Mark, you made about how these players all have injury records, where I think Arteta's probably realised, I can't rely on them. I need to think of new ways to cope without them. And long term, it could be that the team evolved beyond all three of these players, I think.
Right, debate settled. Let's move on. Guys, we're still a few days away, actually, from what is a Monday trip to Sheffield. You two making that long, arduous trip up the M1. I suppose a good place to start, given what we've just been talking about, is can you see any of these injured players that are on their way back? Oh, Gabby Jesus on the bench at the weekend. Do any of them work their way into this team at all, Kaya?
I don't think you risk them, really. I don't think this is the game to risk throwing them back in. You could argue that Emile Smith-Rowe is maybe a player on his way back from injury, given that he got that ankle problem a couple of weeks ago. He would be interesting to see if he gets thrown in, just because you're rotating a bit, and I don't think you need Jorginho and Declan Rice away at Sheffield United. No disrespect to them, but they've conceded 5 goals in their last 3 home games, and I think you want a bit more offensive power up front, and I think Havertz looked really good up front against Newcastle, so I wouldn't necessarily change that. I think of all the injury players, I know Smith-Rowe doesn't quite fall into that category, but I'd probably say he's the most likely to come back. I don't see why Arteta would risk throwing any of them in from the start, really. Obviously, there's quite a big gap until their next game against Brentford, which is on the Saturday. So there's no real quick turnaround that they need to rush players back for. So I think in an ideal world, Arsenal will do what they've done in their past couple of away days, and they'll go really far in front within the first hour. And then Arteta can start to maybe ease back in some of these injured players who have been on their way back.
Flipping that round, Simon, I suppose. It might not be a risk to bring. It might be a risk to bring players back, but is it a chance to rotate? First of all, is it a chance to rotate in terms of giving some players a rest? You know, you look at Rice and people like that. Maybe they deserve a rest, but also, does he have to? Does he want to? Do you think with Brentford and a few other games, we've got Champions League coming up on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Arteta, he just so rarely really fully rotates, unless it's sort of a Carabao Cup or Europa League game. If it's Champions League, Premier League, he just sort of plays the best team. And I think he'll want to get to that point where you get the game won early and get players off. But this period of games, they've obviously had a big gap to Sheffield United, but they're going to have 3 games in 9 days. And the turnaround between Brentford and Porto is very short. So I think he'll probably go strong at Sheffield United and try and get the game won early. And the same at... Oh, it's my dog this time. More editing out.
Lily's got proper dog vibes, though. Mine's a little yapper. God, you haven't got. We just have a dog set up on your Alexa, so you can go.
Yeah. I'll just get something to bark. I'll just get Sam Dean to send me more horny memes.
Leave that in.
Yeah, I mean, so I think his for these. The 2 games this week, the Premier League games, I think he'll want to go strong and then get players off early. The interesting one I do think is sort of Smith-Rowe. I know we saw him, he started at Forest away. They're going to be a sort of similar sort of team. You know, Sheffield United are going to be sitting in that low block. Smith-Rowe's good in tight spaces, so maybe he's someone that comes in. But I think at the moment for Arteta, it's momentum, play your strongest team and go for it and try and get it won early. And he has been a bit better in recent weeks, I think, in getting players off. Like, we've seen Saka come off before 70 minutes, and I know they've been winning 6-5-0, but there has been a shift in that, and I think he'll try to do that again.
Liverpool away at Forest on Saturday, while City face an easier test when they host Manchester United on Sunday, Kaya. But after what Arsenal did to West Ham and Burnley, where can this go wrong for them? Overconfidence, can that happen maybe?
Yeah, I think if it's going to be anywhere, it would be underestimating Sheffield United. I know that they've obviously been terrible at home in certain games, and that will be an issue for them. But they have actually improved a little bit in terms of they're getting more shots on goal. They're playing a bit more attacking football. Their second half against Wolves was decent. I thought they've beaten Luton relatively recently, and Luton away is a very tricky game to win, and they did win that. And I know they haven't really got many players you'd think would cause Arsenal problems, especially up front. And I do remember in the reverse fixture when they basically came, sat deep, put 9 men behind the ball and tried to play long ball up to Ryan Brewster. I think they'll maybe be a little bit more, you'd like to think, a bit more ambitious than that this time, given that they need points. But you can never rule it out, because when a team is this far cut adrift, they've almost got nothing to lose. And a lot of these players might be thinking about playing for moves next season and trying to stay in the Premier League and thinking about their own reputations. And that'll be big for them. They've also got a newish goalie who's looked a little bit better than West Brom, who were struggling quite a bit. So Arsenal should be looking at racking up the kind of score they did against West Ham and Burnley. Goal difference boost is always good, and Sheffield United have conceded 5 in their last 3 home games, as I mentioned before. But it's not necessarily the walkover that I think many fans will be expecting. But I'm sure Mikel Arteta is the kind of coach who won't let them get lulled into that false sense of security. We've all seen his sort of pre-match team talks in the Amazon documentary, and I think we all know that he's not the kind of guy who will take his foot off the gas. He's a very intense individual, and I don't think he'll let his Arsenal players let up at all.
Simon, it's different to Burnley. Yeah, obviously, you're in Burnley. Burnley try and play football for better or for worse. But this Sheffield United team, probably one of the worst Premier League teams of all time, isn't it? But is there anything to it being a Monday night under the lights? The crowd are going to be massively up for it. TV camera. It's the kind of game, I suppose, I'm trying to say, that maybe 2 or 3 years ago, the kind of game Arsenal would have gone and lost 1-0, isn't it? But do you still see that? Or is this a team now that can play to the occasion?
100%, I would agree with you that a few years ago we'd be looking at this and being like, oh, you know, that'll be where they'll slip up. They'll go on a great run and then they'll go to someone they should easily beat and roll over. But I do think they are much better at coping with these cages. Largely, you know, we talk a lot about the attack, but I think defensively, because they are so solid and give absolutely nothing away.
That's because Zinchenko isn't there, by the way.
But they basically just sort of suffocate these teams. And I think, you know, I noticed that some of the away games they've gone to where they've just absolutely like taken the life out of the game because they've had so much of the ball. The opposition team have had no sort of sniff of a chance or anything to get the crowd up. And it basically just sort of kills the game and just absolutely stifles it, which is why I think they've had such a good away record, is the way they're set up. They just don't give these teams a sniff. Whereas the sort of Arsenal of old, you know, there'd always be that, oh, there's that possible ricket in them, or, you know, you can get at them, you can sort of rough them up. Whereas this side, they give you so little that for the fans, there's so little hope to get them going. And particularly that Burnley game, you know, Odegaard scored after 4 minutes and like what little atmosphere there was at Turf Moor just absolutely went. So I think for this game, it'll be the same for Arsenal, that if you start fast and you control the game, you know, you will silence that crowd, because I think Wilder was sort of tasked to go in there and sort of lift the mood and sort of be a bit of a firefighter, but it is petering out and you just look at the table and they're running out of games. So I think they will try and make it an atmosphere, you know, they'll be bang up for it. But for Arsenal, that first sort of 20 minutes, you can sort of kill that game and suck whatever life is out of the place.
They've never been known as flat track bullies, Kaya, but the recent run of results has actually suggested that is what this team can become, isn't it?
Yeah, Liverpool famously easily flat track bullied into a defeat. Yeah, no, you're right. They have they've been really hammering teams. But what Simon mentioned there about the defence being strong, I think that's the... You suck the hope out of any team. I think, I saw this stat in the rounds, the XG Arsenal conceded from the shots is like 1.6, and then the next highest is Man City with 6 since the winter break. So that is a sign of just how dominant they can be. And those kind of teams, those kind of atmospheres under the lights at Bramall Lane, packed, what it needs is sort of, it's a tinderbox that needs a match to set it off. And if you don't give them anything, if you just pour cold water over it, to use one of our favourite sort of terminology from our report writing, if you pour cold water over it, then there's very little that can be done. And Arsenal are very good at just sucking the life, as Simon said, sucking the life out of any hopes that smaller teams have of doing a number on them. And I think once the belief drains out of those teams, then you start to see the gaps in quality, which become really, really apparent, particularly get this Arsenal side. They seem really hungry at the minute. They seem really keen to keep going, and they don't seem to want to declare it 2 or 3. They seem to want to go for 4, 5 and 6. And players have mentioned that, and Arteta has mentioned that himself. So I think that's a massive part of their ability to properly hammer these teams now that are lower in the table. And it was what they were doing earlier in the season as well, I should point out. They just weren't racking up the goals that sort of warranted their dominance. Now they're getting those goals, and it's very positive.
Lest we forget, Eddie Nketiah scored a hat-trick, I believe, in the 5-0 win earlier in the season. The lesser spotted Nketiah these days. Guys, we've done a good enough job there of building up what will no doubt be a 1-1 draw on Monday night. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back on Tuesday, obviously, to look back on that game and for another instalment of Guess the Gooner. But until then, stay safe, everyone.